Hello, my name is Simon Ward and I would like to welcome you to the Triathlon Coach podcast. If you don't already know me, I'm the founder of thetriathloncoach.com and the SWAT Inner Circle, and I've been a triathlon coach for over 20 years, working with absolute beginners right up to Olympic champions and covering all distances from sprint to Ironman. Now it's my goal in this weekly 30-minute podcast to share practical, usable advice from the best athletes, coaches and experts from the world of triathlon, so that you can get the most from your training time and maximise your enjoyment of the triathlon lifestyle. So as I've already said, we've got just 30 minutes, so let's get rolling with today's guest. Actually, there's no special guest this time, and instead this week I'm going to take a different tack by having a stab answering some of the new member questions for people who join our Facebook page, The Triathlon Coach Cafe. Now, I've had so many in recent weeks that I've divided them up into various topics. And by far, the most popular, as you might imagine, are about training. So let's have a go at answering some of those. Now, the first group of questions are all slightly different, but they're focused on a very similar question. So I'll put them together here, and then I'll see if I can provide one answer rather than an answer for all or each different one. So Anastasia Kormatova and Oliver Coffey, they're struggling to schedule all three disciplines, weight training and recovery, into 1 week, and they want to know what the best way is to create a training plan. Izzy Charlotte wanted to know how many times a week she should be training, and so did Joe Crawford. She also wanted to know how she could find a plan that would get me to complete the ITU World Triathlon Series race in Leeds, the age group one, without losing my life to training. Luke Ainsworth wanted to know how to balance a training plan correctly. And Chris Roby wanted to know how much training should he realistically be doing. Kelly Arnott was inquiring about what the average hour spent per day for the average person training for Olympic distance. Nick Sombrero Harrison asked, how on earth do you swim, cycle and run and get prepped for it? While Steve Lardy-Jones had a slightly different tack and wanted to know what your primary focus is when training. And Alex Webb and Nathan Hung were fairly similar, asking which discipline should they focus most on. Finally, Abodi Al-Gharib asked, how do I train properly to switch between the tri games? Now, I know, Abodi, you don't have much triathlon experience, so I'll try to answer that here. So let's start with a blank sheet of paper. Before you decide maybe even what race you're going to do, and definitely how much training you want to do, you want to do a full audit of your life. So you have 168 hours per week. From that, you need to subtract how many hours you have to spend at work and then the time around that you spend commuting, although we may be able to use some of that for training if you can ride into or run into work. It's important to get sleep, so you have to factor in the amount of sleep that you need every evening. And don't forget that the sleep that you require when you're not training will go up when you do start training, because you have to get more recovery from all the extra activity. Now, there'll be incidental time in there, time preparing for and eating your meals, time spent with your family, time spent with your friends. And when you've added up all of the commitments for your time each week, subtract them from 168, you'll get a small number of hours that you can devote to training. And this isn't your final number. Some weeks will be better than others, so it may be possible to devote 10 or 12 hours in some weeks, and on others, you may be only able to devote 6. So what you have to do is work out how many hours you can train for and consistently recover from on a regular basis. Please also remember that as you progress through the year, your training load will increase, in order to take account of your increasing fitness and building yourself up towards your chosen race. And of course, these demands on your time will be much greater if you want to race in a half Ironman, and greater still if you're going to race in an Ironman event. So when we've done all that, we get a certain number of hours. So let's just say that you've got 10, because that's a nice round number, but it may be 8, it may be 6. You may find that you've got 12 or 14, although it's very, if you don't have children, you're not running your own business, you might find that you've got more time. Some people think that they've got more time, but then get a rude awakening when they realize that they haven't. And that's when it all starts to go belly up. we have a number of 10 hours. Into that, we have to divide the following. Some swimming, some biking, some running. There's also strength and conditioning, which must not be relegated to the bottom of the list of priorities. And there's also mobility and stretching. Now, these two last ones, mobility and stretching, and mobility, stretching and strength and conditioning, are foundations for enabling you to perform well. So if you marginalize those in order to run or swim more, you may find that whilst you're improving your cardiovascular system, actually your performance doesn't get any better because you're not able to get into the right position or move efficiently. So please do not marginalize strength and conditioning and the mobility stretching work. So you factor those in. I would say that you should be doing at least an hour of strength and conditioning per week and probably an hour of mobility, but you can fit that in small amounts. You don't have to do it in 1 hour or 1 hour or 30 minute segments. That, let's say, leaves you 8 hours for running. I'd say you probably want to be spending around 45 to 50% of your time cycling. It's the biggest portion of any race, regardless of the distance, sprint right up to Ironman. It's the biggest portion of your race. It's also the one that's going to have the biggest effect, not just on your finishing time, but also on your ability to run well. Now, swimming is the smallest portion of the race, but it's the one that requires the most technical competency. And it will take you a long time to become comfortable and relaxed in the water and become efficient. So I wouldn't reduce swimming to improve running. Likewise, running, whilst it's the one where you may feel like you're able to work hardest, it's the one that's also likely to, or more likely to result in you getting injured. So I wouldn't run as much as you think you possibly can. Remember, you'll get cardiovascular benefit from swimming and biking. Running skill actually is really important. Now, how much time you devote to each of these will depend on your prior history. If you're a complete novice in all three sports, then I'd probably be devoting 30% of my time to swimming, 20% of my time to running, 50% of my time to cycling. If you come from a swimming background when you were at school, perhaps, then you might be able to reduce the swimming to 20% and probably up the running. But remember that if you're a swimmer, you probably don't have the stiffness around the ankles that's required to run. So you may need to spend time in the gym strengthening yourself for running rather than actually running itself. So there's a whole load of variables that go in there. And for each of the people listening to this podcast, it will be slightly different makeup of training volume. But please don't forget the strength and conditioning and the mobility, plus the nutrition, plus the recovery. Those are really important. And they're the foundations, the bedrock upon which good swim, bike and run performances are actually made. So if you minimalize those to do more swimming, biking and running, it may not actually improve your performance. So Anna, Stasia and Oliver, I hope that helps you to schedule them all in. If you're having trouble with the strength and conditioning, you can use it as a warm-up before swimming or running or biking. You can do small amounts throughout the day rather than spending 30 minutes at a time at the gym. You could get yourself a set of kettlebells or a TRX and have them at home so you can fit in 5 minutes when you can. Izzy, Charlotte, if you're doing a sprint triathlon or want to, then you may only need to swim, bike and run once a week on each if that's all you have time for. But really, I wouldn't be saying about how much should you be doing. What can you do on a consistent basis? So hopefully I've answered all of your questions there. But if there is anything that you want more information on, please make a comment after the podcast or send me a private note to beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she'll make sure it gets to me. Okay, moving on then, we have Andrew Kennedy. Andrew wanted to know whether time-based training or distance-based training is better. For me, Andrew, time-based training, i.e. the duration of your training, is always the more important. Let's take a bike ride, for example. If it's a nice flat course and a nice calm day or you have a tailwind behind you, you could probably cycle 20 to 25 miles in an hour. But you might be able to do that fairly comfortably. If you lived in the Pennines, in the Lake District, in Cornwall, you may only get 12 or 13 miles in because of the hilly terrain, but the ride would probably be harder. So I would always go for time-based training. And if you use Training Peaks or any of the other training tools that work out total load, it's usually the amount of the duration of your training session multiplied by the intensity of the training session, which comes up with the training load metric. So time-based training for me is always better. Now, Patrick Temler wanted to know if there are different training concepts. And yes, Patrick, there are. Sometimes they're invented by coaches so that the coaches have something to sell. Sometimes they're popularized by research which has come out. Two of the ones that I think of which spring to mind are sweet spot training, which is in that sort of intensity zone between 75 and 90% between the two threshold zones, or polarized training, which is either side of sweet spot. Rob Perkins asked about reverse periodization, and that could also be called a training concept. And Rob, you wanted to know, is it all it's cracked up to be? Well, standard periodization, as we know, it starts off with endurance training. And as you get close to your race, the training gets more intense and maybe less in volume. If you're training for long distance triathlon, it may be that you do your intense training in the winter and the duration and endurance work comes in the summer, in which case it could be called reverse periodization. On the other hand, I would just say that's standard periodization for long distance racing. So it depends what distance of race you are doing, Rob. I think there is something about it. I think it's just the terminology that we're discussing here. Now, within that training, Sydney Brazil asked me, do I train like it's training or do I train like it's competition? Difficult one to answer here. My personal preference at the moment is for a polarized training model for most of the year. And if you're training in this manner, a lot of your training will be below 75% intensity and will feel moderately easy. And unless you're doing really long endurance races, then it's not going to be training like competition. I suppose running at 70% intensity or biking at 70% intensity could actually be exactly like your Ironman intensity. So maybe it is like competition. However, I would have competition in mind, but I would always have the goal for the training session. What are you actually trying to do? Are you trying to develop techniques, skills? Are you trying to develop strength? Are you trying to develop aerobic endurance? Or are you trying to push your VO2 max? When you're trying to do the high intensity work, then maybe it does feel like a competition and that might get you motivated. But I think it's a little different for every session. So I don't think you always want to be training like it's competition. But then sometimes in training, you may want to make it competitive. The next four questions were all about getting the most out of the time you put in. So Tom Simper said, how best to work to a training plan so I get the most out of the time I put in. Namzaron Imzaron asked, how to train for an Ironman when you work 5 days a week? Probably standard for most people, Namzaron. How to spend less time and get better results, from Zvabignio Ligenza and Lindsay Turner. And what does smart training look like for me, by David Rudland? So here goes on this one. If you've got a limited amount of time to train, then this is where we really ought to get rid of this idea of junk miles. Even if you're just spinning on your bike, there's something you can do to make that time more worthwhile. You could practice one-legged pedaling so you even out your pedal stroke. Without going to too high an intensity, you could actually work on different cadences, super fast cadence, getting up above 120, 130 revs per minute, or down and do much lower and do really low cadence, big gear work. Any of those really works. If you're out running, you could go for an easy run. At the same time, you could spend some of that time doing some strides or some of that time doing some technique work. Running drills, for instance. When you're in the swimming pool, you shouldn't just swim up and down. You can use your time far better if you're doing intervals or working on drills or a little bit of both. One example of training that I see where I really do think people are not getting the most out of their time is when they just turn on the TV. They're on the turbo session, for instance, or on a treadmill. They turn on the TV and they get distracted by what's on the telly, which means that they're not concentrating fully on what they're doing on the bike or on the treadmill. Now, to me, that is junk mileage. So I would be saying, switch off those gadgets. turn off the music and really focus on the exact drill, technical work, or intensity that you want to train at, and make sure you're absolutely spot on while you're doing that. Otherwise, you're wasting a bit of your time. It's no good saying, I got to the end of that 1 hour, I've done my 1 hour, I've ticked it off because that was what was on my training plan, because you've not really made the most out of it. There's so much more that you could do. Now, Namza, on your question about how to train for an Ironman when you work 5 days a week, is one that probably is on the mind of a lot of people. If you really insist on doing an Ironman when you work, when you're busy, that's fine, but be happy and agree with yourself and accept what the results might be when you're working. And then go back to the points that I made at the beginning of this podcast about how much time to spend training, and work out a plan that enables you to be consistent. If you can be consistent in the lead up to your race, then you'll do far better than if you just put in big chunks. And when you work 5 days a week, one of the things you can do is you could commute to work and back on your bike, or if you live close enough, you could run, or some people I know get the bus halfway and then run the last bit, or they run the first bit and then get on the train to get the rest of it. So there are clever ways you can work. You can also do some high intensity training during the week when you've got less time, and then use the weekends to do your long training. So it is possible, and you will see examples of people who do really well at Ironman working with these sorts of time constraints. So don't let it restrict you, but just be mindful of what you have available and what you can play with. Svabigneo and Lindsay, you wanted to know how to spend less time to get better results. So again, I would be looking at whether you really need to do that training, what the training is, are you actually maximizing that training? Maybe you could do more productive warm-ups. Maybe you could be more mindful of exactly what you're doing within there and have a goal for every session before you actually turn up to the session. So a lot of people spend 10 minutes looking at the session, working out what they're going to do first. You should already have that in your mind so that when you get to the pool, you can jump straight in and do your warm-up. And maybe that warm-up is the sort of warm-up you'll be doing for a race. So you're doing two things there. You're preparing for your event, and you're also preparing for that swim session with a race-specific warm-up. And for you, David Rudland, that is what smart training looks like. I would also say that smart training looks like listening to your body. And if you've got a hard training session on the plan and you're not really up for it, then just knock it back a bit and do an easy training session. There's no smart is not bashing yourself when you're not ready for it. That's unsmart or stupid, whatever you like to call it. Okay. Kim O'Neill wanted to know, do I train by heart rate or feel? Well, Kim, that's a great question. And I think that if you're starting off in the sport, or if you really want to get a good foundation and the basic grounding, you must always be in the position when you can respond to what your body is telling you. If you can train like that, train hard when your body's ready for it, train easy or take a day off when you're tired, and understand the difference between tiredness and laziness. And I don't think I could ever call triathletes lazy, but understand when you need to go easy, then I think you'll do really well. And if you can master that, then perhaps add in heart rate. But heart rate will just tighten up those zones that you train in. You can do really well just by going by feel. And please remember that heart rate monitors have only been around since the mid-1980s. So before that, nearly every athlete used to train by feel. So it's not a new concept. It's just one that's gone out of fashion, really, because we've got gadgets to do stuff for us. So, yep, Kim, learn how to do it by feel. Now, Matthew Hart said, well, why can't there be simple heart rate zones, as there are loads of different types? You're right, Matthew. I think that what's happened is each coach is looking to get the edge, probably in terms of their publicity. So they create these training zones. They go very scientific. Personally, I like going easy, below about 75 to 80%. I like going really, really hard. And then I think there's the bit in the middle. My definitions of really, really easy are feeling guilty, because what most people do when they're training in that zone is they go a little bit harder because they don't think it's actually hard enough to do them any good. And then when they get to the very top end and they've got to go hard, they don't go quite hard enough because they think it's going to promote injury. So they end up in that middle zone. Call it what you like, black hole training, chronic cardio training, no man's land. There's three different zones. There's also the recovery zone, which is even easier still than the easy zone, probably below about 60% intensity. So if you want wanted to go for a recovery training session, just go for a brisk walk. At the top end, there's also anaerobic training, which is maximal efforts for 20 to 30 seconds. And there is some value in doing this for triathlon. It's not that popular, and a lot of people don't talk about it. So that would probably give you five zones, but three that you would probably work in most of the time. Now, Andrew Fish said, is training around heart rate zones, functional threshold, power, etc., fundamental for everyone or only for those looking to achieve elite-type results? I'm not sure it's elite-type results, Andrew, but I would agree that perhaps it's not fundamental for everybody. And if you can refer back to the advice I gave to Kim O'Neill just a few seconds ago, if you can learn to train by feel and based on what your body's telling you, then you will go a very long way. Most of the people I know that want to use training zones don't understand how to respond to what their body's saying. So they can't do the basics right before they want to make it more advanced. So I would probably agree with you that for those people who are trying to squeeze out the last few percentages, then yes, zones and FTP are good, but you can get by pretty well without them. So some questions now about when we get training and how to increase our pace. So Sharon Harrison wanted to increase pace. Unfortunately, Sharon, you didn't say what sport you wanted to increase your pacing or by how much. If you want to go a little bit faster in your race, I'll rephrase that. If you want your race times to drop a little bit so you get to the finish line quicker, you don't necessarily need to go that much faster. Half a mile an hour on the bike would probably take 30 seconds off your time. All you need to do is put in a tiny little bit more effort for the duration of your bike. And obviously, over longer distance races, half a mile an hour becomes more significant. Could be 10 or 15 minutes in an Ironman, maybe only a minute or two in your standard distance triathlon. Also find that a lot of people lose pace as they get towards the end of the race. So it's not that they need to go faster. It's that they need to learn how not to slow down as much. And often, and again, this will depend on the length of the race, but in Ironman races, slowing down isn't because you're running out of breath and you can't get the oxygen in. It's generally because your hips, your back, your hip flexors, your calves are not functioning as effectively as they did in the earlier part of the race. And developing this ability to keep going at the pace you start at probably hasn't got anything to do with cardiovascular fitness. It's got more to do with technique and even more to do still with mobility and strength and conditioning. So going right back to what I talked about at the very, very beginning of this podcast. So more time in the gym, perhaps, Sharon, in order to improve your efficiency, enable you to keep the pace for longer rather than trying to actually move faster. Hopefully, Pak Raghavendra, that was the answer to your question. You needed guidance to improve the timings in all three sports. Marie Llewellyn. Marie wanted to know, how significant is the effect of not training for a week? Well, one of the big things that I talk about is consistency, and I always like athletes to have consistency in their training. So missing training for a week, you will lose out on the consistency. However, in terms of your aerobic fitness, you may not feel like you've lost that much. In the swimming pool, you may feel a bit slower, but this is more down to the feel for the water and your body balance in the water rather than aerobic fitness. On the bike and the run, you may even benefit from having a week's rest mentally and physically. So I would say that not training for a week, you're probably not going to really notice the difference. Unless, of course, you're going on a week-long bender, eating and drinking as much as you can, and doing so, putting on a couple of kilos, and then you will be a little bit slower and a little bit more sluggish. But generally, a week's not too bad. Marie, so if it's a holiday you're having to take without any training, or if you've been ill, I wouldn't worry too much. Okay, Chris Kitchen then asked, what's my go-to training session for swim, bike and run? Chris, I don't really have a go-to session, I'm afraid. I chop and change depending on the year. I've recently, well, in the last 18 months, been doing a lot more polarized training, a lot more easy training and some very, very hard sessions. But I don't have a particular go-to training session for swim, bike and run. I have test sets that I use that help me to gauge what my fitness is. So on the swim, it would be something like 15 100s off 2 minutes and my best pace that I can hold for that. And if I can hold a 119 or a 120, then I know that I'm going pretty well. On the bike, it would be similar. It would be 4 times 8 minutes at threshold and seeing what power I can hold over all 4 reps and what my heart rate is. And on the run, I will probably just have a local circuit that I do and just create a little bit of a time trial for myself, really. But I'm afraid I can't give you any more specifics than that because it would depend on the different type of sessions that people do and the races that they're aiming for. Jake Springer. Jake wanted to know, can or should I do speed work throughout the whole year? Yes, I think you should and could and can, Jake. One of the big reasons that people get injured is when they make a sudden change in their intensity and or make a sudden change in their running style. So they go to the track and they're running on their toes a bit more. If you introduce a little bit of speed all the year round, you maybe only need to do 5 minutes of it at certain points of the year and then pick it up as you get close to your races. I think that's perfect. In fact, what I always say is that you should do all types of training all year round. And what changes is just that priorities that those training methods have, and that will depend on the proximity to your race. So it's a good question, Jake, and the answer is yes. Now, Stuart Foster, you wanted to know about how to keep the training interesting. Well, Stuart, by all means, just change the sessions. Think about what you want to achieve. So if it's a threshold session, you need to be spending time around your threshold, not necessarily above it, not at it, sometimes just below it, but you probably need to be doing 20, 30, 40 minutes worth of work. So if you're swimming, for instance, you could do 20 100s at threshold. You could do 10 200s. You could do 5 400s. You could do 100, 200, 300, 400, 500, and then a 600. Or down again, or you could do 1, 2, 3, 4, 3, 2, 1. So there's lots of ways to skin a cat. Sorry, didn't want to offend any of you cat lovers there. There's lots of ways to dress this up, Stuart. And I would say that if you really need to be entertained during your sessions, then just look at ways in which you can achieve the same thing in a slightly different way. Marty Martinez then, what's the best post Ironman recovery, race recovery 2 week plan? Well, Marty, my standard Ironman recovery plan goes like this. In the first week, I just don't try to do any training. I try to walk around as much as possible. I keep moving. I might go and play in the water, but I won't do any swimming. I might go ride my bike, but it'll probably just be to go to the shops or to go out for a little tootle along by the canal where I live. Nothing structured. If I don't feel like doing anything and I want to go for a snooze, then I'll do that. If I've got a bit more time, I might ride to work, but there'll be no intensity and I won't be recording it as training. In the second week, I might introduce a bit more swimming and a little bit more biking, but again, it's unstructured. I probably wouldn't do anything long and I definitely wouldn't be doing any running. Now, there will be some people who say, yeah, but I've got another race coming up in 4 weeks. My answer to that is, why would you schedule another race 4 weeks after an Ironman? That's the recovery plan I recommend. It's not my fault if you plan to do a race so soon after an Ironman, but you should consider these things when you're actually pressing the enter button on your computer. Now, John Hepworth, he said, what takes longer to gain after a long layoff, speed or endurance? Difficult, that one, John. Depends how long your layoff is. He says, does it matter which order I focus on first, considering the rubbish weather and the dark nights? Let's say you've had a really long layoff, a year. If you follow the primal endurance method, which is pretty much polarized training, you would spend 4 to 8 weeks doing just steady state training, 180 minus your age. So if you're 40 years old, you'd be using that 140 as your maximal heart rate and going underneath that. Will feel quite easy. When you're out running, you may actually be reduced to walking. After 8 weeks, then you can introduce 5 or 10% of your total weekly volume as quite high intensity work and just keep that going. But you do that intuitively. You don't have it planned in. It just happens. If you feel like going for a blast, do it. Otherwise, just keep going easy. And slowly, John, you follow a training plan like that, but you would keep to the polarized method. That's a good book I would recommend, reading Primal Endurance. And for Steve Skelhon and Stuart Doyle, who asked about books that I would recommend, these are the books that I would recommend for you. Primal Endurance with Mark Sisson and Brad Cairns. I like the Ben Greenfield book. I've forgotten what that one is called now. I'll think of that one in a minute. The Triathlete's Training Bible is really good with Joe Friel. Iron Fit by Don Fink, or Going Long with Gordo Byrne and Joe Friel. And the book from Ben Greenfield is called Beyond Training. So those are some really good books that I would recommend. So Matt Poole, Matt, you said, how do I understand all the Training Peaks data? Matthew, I don't have time to tell you all that on here. What we could do is schedule a call and you could tell me what questions you want to know, and then I could talk you through that. That would be the best thing. Or I can do a podcast on my own, or perhaps I can get one of the guys from Training Peaks along and we can go through it with them and you can hear it straight from the horse's mouth. And Mark Hughes and James Walsgrove wanted to know the best recovery methods. Well, there's many, many recovery methods. And in fact, in Ben Greenfield's book, Beyond Training, he talks about a lot of these. Nutrition is a great one, and how you schedule your nutrition and some of the micronutrients that you can use to help with recovery. Ice is now, and cold treatment, cold thermogenesis treatment is now considered to be really good. The one thing that I have concluded that most triathletes, including myself, haven't really nailed yet is sleeping. It's the best recovery method bar none. It's the thing we've been doing since we were born, and it's the thing we will do till we die, and yet we're not very good at it. So if you can just get more sleep, that will help. If you can crack basic sensible eating, that will help. If you can crack listening to your body and responding to it, so when it tells you it's tired, that will help also. And I think that would take me back to Ian Arneson and Aisha Kadiri, who asked, how do I know if I'm overtraining? So there are many methods. I use heart rate variability now, and that tells me a little bit if I'm under recovered. One of the best ways is your motivation to train. The Australian Institute of Sport used to rely on this very heavily. If you're lacking motivation to train, it usually means you're fatigued. I find that if I'm not sleeping very well and I'm a bit fatigued, I'm a bit grumpy and irritable as well. So that's one way. Muscle soreness is reasonable, but there are 12 different systems in the body. So if you're only responding to muscle soreness, that means you're ignoring 11 other different types of recovery indicators. So it's not all about that. And some of them are not possible to measure without some invasive methods. So again, motivation to train is a really good one. Resting heart rate works for some people. Quality of sleep, the stress levels that you're under. And I would recommend heart rate variability, and perhaps listen to one of the podcasts I did recently with Dan Plews to get a bit more information about that. Now, John Gibbons, you wanted to know about training consistency. You only asked about training consistency. So what I can say is it's the number one way in which you can predict what your racing is going to be like. If you've had a consistent winter, that's by far my number one priority. To ensure training consistency, you don't want to get ill, which means avoiding overtraining and pushing yourself too hard, and you want to avoid injury. Most injuries come from running. So in order to avoid running injuries, make sure you don't ramp up your training volume too quickly. Make sure you have the strength, particularly in the lower limbs, because that's where most of the injuries come from. So lots of calf raises, lots of mobility around the ankles. And also make sure that you're doing your mobility work. And that's it, John. Recover well, listen to your body, avoid injury and illness. So we're almost there now. Chris Pike asked me, in long course tri, these events last from 8 to 17 hours, depending on your genetics and level of training. How important necessary is it to undertake training sessions that will mimic the expected duration distance of an event? So Chris, I think for most people, it would be psychologically important to know that they can at least complete the distance of an Ironman event. I made sure before I did my first Ironman, and I did the sport for 8 years before that one now, although a lot of people come into the sport just to do Ironman these days. But even so, I'd want to know that I could swim 4K, and I'd want to know I could do it inside the cutoff time. I'd at least want to have ridden 112 miles once. And I think I'd like to know that I can run a marathon. However, 26 miles of running in training is going to take a lot out of you and require a lot of recovery. So that would be my least of my recommendations. Aside from that, once you know you can do those distances, then I think it's important to improve your fitness so you can go faster and improve your efficiency so you can maybe go at the same time with less energy. That doesn't necessarily need you to replicate those distances all the time or times. Maybe on the bike, you'd want to get used to being in that position for several hours so you know you can run off it. But that's the one I will be most focused on, and making sure you do the swim. And this links in nicely with James Plummer, who wanted to know what your longest brick should be during Ironman training. Well, Jamie, I have two types of bricks that I do. I have a long bike, 4, 5, 6 hours with a very short run, maybe 20 to 30 minutes at Ironman race pace. The alternative is a moderate length ride, 2 to 3 hours, but really hard. So you're trying to introduce some fatigue in the legs. And then I would add in a long run. 1.5 to 2 hours maybe straight off the bike so that you get to feel what it's like running for extended amounts of time with tired legs. I also do another session, which is called a race simulation day, where you have a swim and a bike and a run on the same day. Now, you don't necessarily do them one after the other. That will be called a race, and that could be a race simulation day. Not necessarily an Ironman, but perhaps a half Ironman. However, Merle O'Connell did ask, is it important to do swim to bike brick sessions? Now, this is one area that's often overlooked, but there is a bit of a skill in getting onto the bike and then riding straight after you've been swimming. It does feel a little different. So in my race simulation days, what I do is I have sometimes I have a long swim, might be a 4K swim, intervals, not just straight out, and then within 15 minutes to get onto the bike and then go out and do a moderate to long ride. And then later on in the day, you would do the run. On other days, I would have the swim in the morning and then I might have the bike to run in the afternoon. But Merle, I would say probably once a month, you'd be okay on that. However, Craig Hearn did ask about transition tips. And Craig, I'm in Mallorca at the moment while I'm recording this, and I've just been watching the 70.3, and I will post a video on my Facebook page showing some of the horrendous T1 skills that were displayed, not just in terms of getting changed and out of your wetsuit and into your cycling gear, but when you come out across the mount line and how you get onto your bike. There are people there that have spent $5,000 on a bike and spent less than 5 seconds learning how to get onto the bike properly and wobbling all over the road, falling off and knocking other people down as well. To be good at this, you need to get a process. You need to get a method that you're going to get on your bike. You can run in transition with your bike shoes on. You can have your bike shoes on your bike attached by elastic bands. I'm not really bothered which way you do it. Just become proficient at the method you choose and make sure that you can do it at a reasonable pace without making any mistakes, rather than trying to rush through and ending up making a fool of yourself. So the only way to do better at that, Craig, is to practice, practice, practice. After open water swims, practice getting out of your wetsuit quickly. When you're at home and you're going out on your bike, put your running shoes on, or practice putting your helmet on and your running shoes and then running out of the garden into your driveway and getting on your bike there quickly. When you come back from your ride, practice undoing your shoes just before you get home and then putting your feet on top of your shoes, on your pedals, and then dismounting like you would as you approach T2. Alternatively, while you're riding, practice taking your feet out of your shoes, riding with them on the top, and then at speed, not looking at your pedals, looking straight ahead at the road for safety, but then trying to put your feet back in. Now, you can even do this on your turbo train if you want, but practice, practice, practice. That's the best way, Craig. Right, Dan Super then. Dan Super wanted to know, how many triathlons can I realistically do in one season or 1 month? Dan, this all depends on what distance you're racing. I would say if you're doing Ironman, 2 would probably be my best answer. Now, I know people do several. That doesn't mean they're doing them at the best of their ability. Sometimes it's just a box-ticking exercise, right? There are people who do 1 Ironman a week. I know at least one person who does that in Britain. There are some people who do 1 Ironman a month. I just think that's far too many to be sustainable. So if you're doing Ironman, I'd say 2 per year, 3 max if you spread them out. So don't do 2 within 1 month. Have 1 at the beginning of the season, 1 at the end. If you're doing half Ironman, then you can recover a bit more. The races take a little less out of you mentally and physically. So maybe you could probably do 1 every 6 weeks there. If you're doing standard distance races, then you maybe do 1 per month. But within all of this, you should have races that you choose to be your A events and races that you choose to use for training. And so you won't be peaking. And what I would say with all of them is you can probably peak twice a year for best effect. Okay, finally then, Adam Lamb wanted to know, do you think a slightly above average age group athlete is able to train to become an elite athlete, or are elite athletes genetically blessed to be able to perform at their level? So I'll answer the first bit. A lot of elite athletes do have genetic advantages. They don't think they do, and they're very humble, and they say that what really marks them out is their ability to train hard. But generally, they do have a slight genetic advantage. Now, I'm not ignoring the fact that they work hard as well. There's got to be a good work ethic. But equally, there are, and I don't think anybody really knows whether they're an above average age group athlete or whether they're an elite until they actually train. There are some people who've come from being just average age groupers, middle of the pack, all of a sudden they change their training methods to get more focus and they're suddenly winning. There are other people who, despite all of the things that they do in a positive way, are never going to be able to get to be more than average age groupers. So I think, Adam, what you should do is don't put any limits on what you're capable of achieving. Don't be unrealistic with either your ambitions or your time. Look to improve over the long term rather than the short term. Remember that the mind is just as important as the body and that recovery is just as important as training, and see how good you can become. Often what's holding people back is not their ability to train, but their ability to recover because there are too many other stress levels in their life. So you want to get all of those stars in alignment in order to get the best out of your body. And I would do an audit and work out what really is your limiter, what's holding you back, whether you're willing to sacrifice something in the short term to get better in the long term, and then see how far you can go. But don't give up your day job just yet. Even work, even being a really good age grouper turning to pro, is generally not a particularly lucrative career move. Great. Right. I've got to the end of those questions. It's taken me exactly 42 minutes, a bit longer than we normally do on the podcast, but I've worked my way through all of those. And in coming weeks, I'll be back answering some more of your questions. Keep sending them in. You can see my answers to some of these on the Triathlon Coach Cafe Facebook page. And if you're not already a member of that, then just pop over there now, ask to join, and we'll accept you. And please do answer the little questions, because that's how I get all the content for this podcast. So for me, thanks very much. I'll be back next time, listeners, with another special guest, not just me talking. So until then, enjoy your week and I'll see you again soon. Bye for now. That wraps up this week's episode. I'd just like to say thank you for taking the time to listen to the conversation today, and I hope you learned at least one thing that you can put into practice in your training. Now, if this was your first time listening, please go back and listen to our previous episodes. I can guarantee that they will be just as good as you heard from today's guest. If you've listened to all the episodes so far, then thank you so much for continuing this learning journey with me. As you might be aware, reviews and ratings are the currency of podcasts, so I would really appreciate it if you could leave a review and a rating on iTunes or Podbean. You could also follow me at the same time. I also have a free gift for you. In 30 years of competing in triathlon and 20 years of coaching, I've learned an awful lot from my own experiences and from some of the guests who have and will appear on this show. And I feel it's my duty, as I approach the latter stage of my coaching career, to share these with you. So I've put together 25 of my best training, racing and lifestyle strategies, and I've squeezed them down into just 2 pages of content. And in order to get hold of this, all you need to do is email triathlonsuccess to beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she will send it right back out to you. You could also think about joining my Facebook community. It's called the Triathlon Coach Cafe. We've got over 2,300 members just like you, eager to find out more about how to improve their training and share their successes with people. It's free to join, but you will have to ask. So go along there, answer the questions, and then we'll even do a little video each week to answer your questions. Finally, if you want to make sure you don't miss future episodes, please subscribe using Podbean or iTunes. We release new episodes every Wednesday. So that's all for now. See you again next week, same time, same place.